Broadcasting from Youngstown, Ohio, this is the MV Red Podcast, the show where we talk about news and politics impacting the Mahoning Valley, the state of Ohio, and the USA. If you want to subscribe to our podcast, find us on your favorite podcast streaming app or visit our website, www.mvred.com. If you want to share your opinion with us, please email info@mvred.com, as we would love to hear from you. Now, let's get things started. Here are your hosts, Michael Metzinger and Dane Davis.
Welcome to episode 31 of the MV Red Podcast. Dane is joining us this evening from... Are you in Geauga County this evening, or you're not out west yet, are you?
Oh yeah, I'm in Geauga. I just voted today, actually.
Oh, that's right, you did say
in
that.
In Chardon, I did early voting. I've never done early voting before, so I'm in Geauga County. Yeah.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. How'd the voting go?
Very well. I've never early voted before. I have voted via absentee ballot. It was a really easy process. Very, very friendly poll workers. They gave me some candy. They gave me a sticker. And one thing I will say about Geauga County, I don't know if you've had the honor of coming to this fair county. It's a very well-organized, well-governed county. We've got clean towns and cities, beautifully paved roads, safe, secure elections, efficient government. It is like America as a first world country, America as it should be. It was a great experience. I love it. I love it. Not like the third world elections that you have in Mahoning County, where, you know, you have to go through like your war torn streets just to get to the polling place. You have to dodge gunfire. You know, there's trash strewn about in the streets because democratic governance has just ruined the once, you know, beating industrial heart of America. It's not like that in Geauga.
Hey, you got to watch what you say about your home. Well, you're from Trumbull County.
I'm from Trumbull. Trumbull is like a nice middle ground. It's kind of country. It's kind of city. It's not like Mahone. See, we got to have a talk. Okay. I know this is early to be going into this, but I went to high school at Ursuline High School in Youngstown. You went to Ursuline. And I came from Newton Falls, Ohio. And Newton Falls is a nice, wholesome, middle-class town. But it's in the country. And people, they made fun of me for being from Newton Falls. And they looked down upon me, right? Because I was a country boy. I was some hillbilly, some hick, right? And they were city kids, you know? And I just now, you know, now that I'm older, I just want to say, like, you guys, that was mean. You shouldn't bully other people for where they come from.
I agree with that. I agree with that. So, on tonight's episode, you don't want to bully anybody.
No.
Anyhow, so on tonight's episode, we kind of, we're about 5 days from Election Day. Not that there's a lot of statewide races in Ohio, but there's a big statewide governor's race in Virginia that's really heating up over the last month, but especially here in the closing days. And we're going to talk about that between Glenn Youngkin, the Republican, and Terry McAuliffe, the former governor of Virginia, the Democrat. There's two polls out this evening that show Youngkin pulling ahead. So we'll get into that a little bit. Also want to talk about the Ohio Senate race, in particular the GOP side of the ticket, with there being a forum held, I think this past Sunday, in Columbus with Hugh Hewitt, the Warren native, Trumbull County native, hosting it. And we'll talk a little bit about that. I have some thoughts on that. And
he went to John F. Kennedy, right?
JFK? Yes, he's a JFK grad. Yep.
Yeah, he's probably one of their most famous grads.
Yeah, he absolutely is. And then lastly, I just want to touch on the passing of, I don't know if Dane, you ever listened to him, but being you're up and working in Cleveland, I'm sure it was around this afternoon, the passing of Mike Trevisano, on the big one, WTAM 1100. From a former coworker of mine, he thought he was actually hosting as of yesterday. I don't know if that's true, but you know, no real details as to his passing, but nonetheless, it's a shame. He was on, I think, from like 3 to 6 in the afternoons on WTAM up there in Cleveland, and had a great show. I actually called my mom about it today because I remember, this is how big of a nerd I am politically. I remember growing up before I could drive, having to get allergy shots every week or every 2 weeks, and my mom would take me, and I'd always have Trevisano on in the car. He had that deep voice, that raspy smoker's voice. Now he quit smoking, but nonetheless, he was a powerful voice for especially conservative causes in Cleveland. He did a lot of good as well. I forget what his charity was named up there. I think Coach for Kids. I don't know if that sounds familiar, Dane. But nonetheless, in a dark blue part of the state, for there to be a voice like him was pretty amazing, especially because he was on the air for, I think, 2-3 decades. So hate to see him go. Heard the news this afternoon listening to the Ron Verb show up in Youngstown here. So condolences to his family. I don't know if Dane, do you ever listen to Triv?
Yeah, my dad listened to him. So my dad would tune into WTAM 1100 for the baseball games because sometimes they would carry baseball when 570 did not. So growing up riding with my dad in the car, he would have Trib on occasionally, and he had the most memorable voice, right? Like that's his thing, is the tone of the voice. I never really personally listened to a show. I caught it a couple times driving around in Cleveland. It was on at an odd hour. I think it was the morning or the afternoon. I don't remember. But yeah, he seemed like a decent guy. His show was kind of silly sometimes. I don't know. I didn't really like the format where they have multiple, like, five hosts. You know what I mean?
It's
like
it got a little confusing there in recent years. There was a lot going on there.
But a good guy, a decent guy. And, he's one of those things. So I don't know if you find this, Michael, when you get older, it's like there are things you grew up that your parents were into. And as you get older, you kind of miss those things because you miss that time spent with your family and your parents. And like Trevisano is somebody, not that I necessarily enjoyed, but when I would put him on, it would take me back to like riding the car with my dad on a random errand, right? You know those type of things? Like maybe you go get ice cream and you're like, oh man, this takes me back to like elementary school or high school. Trevisano is one of those things. That's to me, he's more of a nostalgic figure than a political figure, but a decent guy. And yeah, I'm sad to see him go. He didn't seem to be like the healthiest of individuals. I'm not trying to be rude or anything like that. So
certainly not the picture of good health. Unfortunately, no. he was a proud Italian. He enjoyed his Italian food. I believe his son actually has a restaurant up in Cleveland.
Up in Independence.
Is it called Trevisano's?
I don't know, but my dad always mentions that whenever we talk about him. I don't know. It might be. I thought it was in Independence. Yeah, it's a big Italian restaurant, yeah.
So, nonetheless, it's sad to see him go here in the news. I think it was 74, something along those lines. But nonetheless, may he rest in peace and condolences go out to his family. So, wanted to get that in this episode once we heard that news, because again, growing up, I did occasionally tune into his program. So nonetheless, the big story in the political world right now, well, there's plenty of big stories, actually. The implosion of the Democrats in terms of their infrastructure bill is one. Joe Biden's cratering poll numbers, that's another one. But really what's fascinating is this Virginia's governor race. It's a state that back when we were growing up was traditionally a Republican state, but especially since Obama, since 2008, it has turned blue. It actually went to Joe Biden by double digits in last election. But it's a state that's interesting, and I'm going to touch on it in a few minutes. But on election night, it likes to tease Republicans because the way the votes come in, the Republican vote is usually in much of the western and central portions of the state. And the Republican typically does well in those areas. And in some cases, I have some examples that we'll share, the Republican goes up. And it's not until those D.C. suburbs in Northern Virginia, Arlington, Alexandria, Fairfax County, up there, those much more highly affluent areas, heavily liberal, those votes come in. But nonetheless, it's really fascinating because, again, this is a state the Democrats really seem to be taking hold of. It's one of those old swing states that's firmly now in the Democrat camp, it seems. And yet the former governor of the state is in the fight for his life to win a second chance at the governor's seat against Republican Glenn Youngkin. So two polls out this evening that we wanted to talk about. First one, I think, is quite clearly an outlier. Fox News came out with a poll showing Youngkin up by 8 points among likely voters, up a single point among registered voters. I'd probably tend to lean more towards the registered voter thing, because I think it was maybe a week ago they came out with one where McAuliffe was up maybe 4 or 5 points, something like that, in their likely voters. So for it to swing that much in such a short period of time doesn't seem reasonable. And then the other poll out, let me see here, shows Youngkin up by 4. And this is it says coefficient poll. I'd have to look in the details, but that's two polls out this evening showing it Youngkin up. There's another 4 or 5 polls that have this race tied. So I think nonetheless, the story is this is a tight race. It's going to probably be within 1 or 2 points either way. But the Republicans have a legitimate chance in a pretty down year when it comes to politics. Not a ton of big races. A big chance to make a big statement heading into 2022.
Well, you know, so a couple of things on this race in Virginia. One is, why has Virginia become so blue? Right? Why is it so blue? It never used to be blue. And it's because demographics have changed. You know, this is the one thing the Republicans, especially the establishment Republicans, seem not to get, is that Virginia is the host of a surge of legal immigration. And the big Republican mantra when I was growing up and starting to change was like, oh, we're against illegal immigration, but we love legal immigration. Well, thanks to legal immigration, you know, states like Virginia and California, I wouldn't say Colorado, are now solidly blue. Like Virginia used to be a red state or a reddish state. Now it's solidly blue because the demographics of the state have changed, right? The core of the state is still red, but like the Nova suburbs are completely blue. And it's not all like, you know, a rise in the foreign-born population, but that's contributed to it. So that's number one, right? That makes GOP people uncomfortable. Right. They don't like to talk about immigration. They love to talk about illegal immigration. Yeah, we're against it. OK, great. But, you know, we're taking in 1.5 million legal immigrants a year. The country's demographics are changing. These people, when they come in here, there's a question of, you know, what values are they bringing to the country? Number one. And if they're assimilating, what values are they assimilating to? You know, they're not necessarily assimilating to your traditional American values. It's the progressive left values. Right. That's number one. Number two, even those groups, though, I think are starting to choke on the left-wing agenda. And, you know, the big question is over critical race theory being taught, right, in schools. Mm-hmm. And also, like, who controls the schools? The school boards and the government or the parents, right? And to me, you know, this is a fundamental issue. This is fundamental. Who is government set up for? Okay, is government set up for the people to serve the people, or are people exist to serve the collective, the government? And when you have a system where people exist to serve the collective and the government must make decisions, really what you're saying is, because there's no abstract government out there, it's a particular class, right? It's a particular subsegment of society that if you say that people have to serve government or the government must make the decisions, the government must be sovereign in all cases, then what you're saying is a particular class, and it's this upper middle class, highly educated group that have radical, radical beliefs. I mean, think of how far we've come. You know, 20 years ago, the idea of gay marriage was just like unheard of. Right now, it's accepted, and even Republicans don't question it. 10 years ago, the idea that a man could become a woman or a woman could become a man, and that there were all these genders out there, was you know, simply like nobody took that seriously. It wasn't a serious idea. Now, if you disagree with that, right, you'll get the full power of the state coming down at you. And the revolt in Virginia by parents is that parents are like, enough is enough. And the other thing that's going on top of this is this COVID insanity still has not ended. You know, they've been saying that this is going to end and it hasn't ended. And you have to ask, like, okay, why do you send kids to public schools? They're going to go to this school. They're going to be masked up all day, which I don't think is normal for children. I know that's a radical statement, but I don't think kids should be wearing face coverings through the developmental period of their life, okay, for a virus with a 99% survival rate, if not higher. And then if they happen to be white, they're going to be taught, hey, you're racist and you have privilege and you're the reason black people can't get ahead. And oh, by the way, you need to give up more for equity, right? So that somebody else has more. And it doesn't matter your background. It doesn't matter if your parents were heroin addicts and you never met your dad and like you're from a broken home. If you're white, you're privileged, right? And after a certain point, it's like, you know, what is the point of all this bullshit? Like, what is it? You tell me, Michael, like, what's the point of all this? This is just total madness. And because we see it every day, we become sensitive. So anyways, Virginia is just like all this bubbling to a head. And one more thing, and then I'll stop, Michael. I know I go on too long.
No, you're good.
Terry McAuliffe, you know, is like, your parents can't get involved in what we teach the kids. To me, that goes to sovereignty. If the parents can't get involved in what the kids are being taught, then the parents are not sovereign. Some bureaucrat is sovereign. And there's examples, and I've seen them, of gay pornography, just pornography, being taught to little kids and in the libraries for little kids, okay? And it's not even the gay thing. It's pornography for children. And if the parents object to it, they're like, oh, you dumb idiot parents. You're just a bunch of simpletons and anti-intellectuals. And then I'll say one more thing. Okay, the left's new thing is like, we have to teach kids critical race theory. We have to teach kids, you know, gay porn. And we have to teach kids all this. And the kids can't even – have you ever seen test scores lately? Like the kids can't do reading. They can't do writing. Two-thirds of the city of Cleveland are illiterate. In Chicago, I think like a quarter of black students and less than 40% of Hispanic students fail math in reading, in English tests, right? So it's not like, oh, we've made the basics. Now let's get into, you know, the history of racism in America. It's like we can't even get the basics. And it's like, guys, this is just total – this isn't even liberalism. This is just madness. I'm sorry. It's just crazy. And it has to end. It has to end. I'm sorry. It's crazy. I would love for somebody to come on here and defend it all.
That'll be a good, we've talked about it since the start of this show to get somebody of an opposing viewpoint on.
Yeah.
And we've been kind of concentrating, working behind the scenes right now and trying to get some Senate candidates on, which we'll hopefully do in some point in November. But that's something that we definitely got to put on a radar screen. And I feel like it might just be a debate between you and the whoever we bring on, Dane, and I'll just have the popcorn going, munch it away throughout the episode.
Oh, thank you. You should play moderator because you're very reasonable and level-headed, unlike me. So.
So back to this Virginia race. The other thing that is fascinating about it is there's this case in Loudoun County, Virginia, involving
I don't mean to interrupt you. Is it Loudoun County or Loudoun County?
Well, according to the talk radio programs that I listen to throughout the day, it's Loudoun, but there's a random N in there that makes you wonder, like, is it something else? It must be like a silent N. Sort of like Camel, Ohio, and it's spelled Campbell.
Oh. Okay, keep going. Sorry. Yeah.
No. You're good. So, and by the way, on the screen right now, I do have the Real Clear Politics average of the polls. It shows the Republican polling head of McAuliffe in this evening. So, I just wanted to show that. So, back to this particular case in Loudoun County. And I'm going to summarize. I'm going to paraphrase this. I might not have all the facts 100% accurate, so I apologize here. But there was a father who went to a school board meeting in this county and went after the school board and the superintendent because there were allegations that his daughter was sexually assaulted in, I believe, a school restroom by a transgender student. Now, I'm naive. I apologize. I don't know how it works if you're transgender male, female. I don't know. Nonetheless, a transgender individual was accused, credibly accused, that they assaulted this man's daughter. Well, this father was arrested at the school board meeting for disorderly conduct, something along those lines. the school board superintendent said, no, this never happened. Well, there were credible accusations. And this same transgender student went to another school building on in their public school district and was accused of the same exact behavior. And this led the federal Department of Justice, I believe this is all tied in, where the DOJ and maybe the FBI would look at these parents in these school board meetings who are, having emotional warranted tirades, I guess, venting at the school boards and superintendents across the country, and that the DOJ could possibly investigate these parents. So it kind of triggers into that. And then this all morphed into this whole idea of education. Now, education is not a winning issue typically for Republicans. It just isn't and it's usually not something high up on the list, but it's really fascinating that the issue of education might be what pushes this Glenn Youngkin over the finish line. He's really ramped up on this idea that parents should have a say in what is being taught in the schools. So I think in Virginia, it's much more focused on what is being taught in schools. We've had Ryan Gruduski on multiple times. He's been a big advocate of blowing up this idea of critical race theory, whereas in other parts of Ohio, especially my own backyard, it's more of an issue with masks. But it seems like in Virginia right now, it's just CRT and this just parents not knowing what is being taught in the classroom. And then Terry McAuliffe saying that parents shouldn't have a say. It should be left up to the school boards and school administrators. So nonetheless, there's another aspect to this, and I touched on it at the beginning of the show, and it's our current president's poll numbers, which have cratered in the last 90 days. Pre-Afghanistan debacle, Joe Biden's net approval rating, his approval rating exceeded his disapproval by 7.2%, numbers that Trump never saw. That was July 27th. Fast forward to October 27th. He's in underwater 9.8%. That's a swing to the negative of 17% in just 90 days. And his poll numbers in Virginia and across many other states, and including the nation as a whole, have tanked. And that is a state where Joe Biden won by 10 points. His poll numbers, I think, are underwater to the tune of close to 9-10 points there, according to some polls. And it just seems as though the top of the Democrat Party is bringing down McAuliffe as well, in addition to McAuliffe's issues with education.
Can you bring up the little did you bring up the little Biden approval chart, or which chart?
I'll get that up in 1 second while you're talking.
Yeah, no. So you summarized the issues well, what's going on in Virginia. The critical race theory is this new theory, right, that everything that goes wrong in the planet is due to white people. And if you lack melanin in your skin, then, you have life on easy mode, which is interesting because the only institutional discrimination. I'll get to that. The only institutional discrimination that's currently available based on race does not favor white people. I mean, does anybody else remember the story where Joe Biden was trying to prove or pay out agriculture aid based on race? Right? Like, this is mind-boggling. Our society was founded, and we didn't always live up to these principles, sure, and there are a lot of problems in American history, but our society was founded on the principle of equality under the law. And we're throwing that out for this new thing of equity, where it's like, oh, well, equality is not enough. We got to give some other people more so that we have what? The same outcome? Which is also really weird to me, because it's like we have a diverse society. We have to have different cultures, but we all have to have the same outcome. That doesn't make any sense. It's just totally weird, right? It's literally what it is. It's like an ideology of some people have stuff, other people don't have stuff. So let's just create this convoluted ideology so that we can take from the people that have stuff and give it to the people that don't have stuff, which is just envy or socialism or whatever you want to call it. And let's dress it up in fancy language, right, in ideology. To me, the problem is I think there is a limited availability of highly intelligent people, okay, out there. And a society that is truly geared towards progress will take those highly intelligent people and put them in college and make them design rocket ships and build bridges and research technologies, right? But then as society gets to a point where they send just too many people to college and too many morons are getting PhDs and degrees, and they think they're smart, but they really just paid for a credential and they got to do something with all that time and all that money. So they come up with like convoluted junk theories like critical race theory, and they're all just jerking each other off, right? And they're getting funding from like left-wing organizations, and it just leads to the complete implosion of society. And then speaking of implosions, look at Joe Biden's polling numbers. I mean, this guy is horrible. This is why we should never elect
quickly in the Trump territory in terms of polling. Yeah, he went from some of the best numbers that even Obama would have seen to right on par with some pretty rough numbers even for Trump.
Yeah, yeah. Trump at least had like – I feel Trump alienated the majority of Americans, but those that liked him were fiercely loyal to him. Like he had a 45%, 40 to 45%. I'd say 40% were deeply loyal to Trump. 5% were pro-Trump, but they didn't like him. And then the other 10% flipped back and forth, right? And then the rest didn't like him. But Biden doesn't have that dedicated, loyal core people.
He doesn't. He just was not Trump, hence why.
Biden, yeah. He's not a smart guy. Like, he's a low intelligence guy. I mean, I don't know how you could – and it's – I don't know if it's because he's Irish or, you know, like – my wife's Irish, guys. This is a joke. Don't freak out.
As am I. No. Hence why we're related, Dane.
Yeah, hence why we're related. That's crazy to think about. No, but seriously, like Joe Biden is like a cockroach, right? And that when a nuclear war happens, the cockroaches will survive. Joe Biden has been in the Senate since like the Carter administration, maybe the Ford administration.
I think before even Carter.
I think it was before Carter. And so he's just survived. Okay. And he's not good. He's just like everybody else is just getting, you know, taken out, or Hillary Clinton's shooting them, or you know what I mean? Like they're all dying off, or they're imploding for whatever reason. And Joe Biden just is standing there. Right. And he's senile. Like the guy, I've said this before, but the guy doesn't have a speech impediment. The guy's mind is deteriorating. Okay. Speech impediment is you get tripped up in your words. When your mind deteriorates, you just make sentences that mean nothing. And the result of this is like you need leadership in a society. Okay. These are not, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills every time I'm on this podcast because my views are not like hard right views. Okay. No. I'm not saying like the poor should be melted in factories so that we could build like, you know, speedboats for the rich. Okay. I'm just saying basic things. We need somebody who's leading the country that is not senile, not 78 years old. I'm sorry. And we don't have that. And like the country's falling apart as a result.
Excellent points. And Gino DeFabio in the chat says if Virginia swings back to the Republicans, it will be a bloodbath for the Democrats in 2022.
Agreed.
And Biden will be pressured to resign to save the party. I'm not sure. I don't disagree with Gino there. I still don't believe he's going to run again. He's a major liability, as we've seen. The worst of what we feared would happen with him, we're seeing happen. He was a disaster on foreign policy. I remember Robert Gates said that. He's been wrong on everything. And we saw, see that where the numbers went south for him? That was Afghanistan. And just when you thought, okay, he maybe moves past Afghanistan, the numbers have just continued to get worse. And then let's see here. Gino also states, people are beginning to realize what they are in for the next 3 years. And I think the key, and Dane, you hit it when you were on Ron Verb's show, is inflation. And, you know, you could argue all you want, Joe Biden, that you're not going to raise taxes on the middle class, but the inflation that people are going to see, they're already seeing at the grocery store, they're seeing in their gas prices, they're going to see it in their natural gas this winter. Across the board, these prices are through the roof. And yeah, it's not a tax per se, but still, there's less money being able to be used for things that they might need. They're being forced to spend way more on things in the normal course of life. And in many ways, average Americans kind of view that as a hidden tax, and people are just fired up and fed up with it. So great point from Gino in the chat. So we thank him for that.
Yeah, the economy is shit, right? The economy is bad. COVID is worse. So this is the COVID irony.
It's weird. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this economy because it's really with the stock market up so high and all these people, all these businesses looking for jobs and the unemployment rate being good. I think people we understand that there's issues with the economy. And I think the people in DC are struggling to grasp us because on the surface you say those three things, oh, we're in good shape. But when you go underneath into the weeds, you see the problems impacting Americans.
Agreed. There's two good things about the economy, quote unquote. One's the stock market, right? And it's up, like you can't deny it. The two is the unemployment being down, wages being up, the tight labor market. But the thing about the unemployment being down is if you look, there are fewer people. There's around like 5 million fewer people in the labor force today than there was prior to the pandemic, right? There's been a huge drop off of workers. And yeah, wages are technically up, but when the cost of living is going up faster than the pace of wages are going up, your actual living standards are declining and the real wages have declined. People are bringing home less today, especially if you're at the bottom of the quartile, than they did before when you control for inflation. And I know headline inflation is like 5.6%. I guarantee you it's higher. I guarantee you it's higher. And especially in the areas that really, really count, right? And on top of that, you know, you can say like, well, that's not necessarily due to Joe Biden, but he's had a heavy hand in it. I'll tell you why. We paid billions of dollars for people not to work. Right. Which the more we look back on it, I think was an absolute disaster. He signed the American Rescue Plan, which was a huge amount of money being thrown into the economy when it wasn't needed. And now he's arguing for even more spending, you know, over $2 trillion. I don't know what the final number will be in additional spending on top of another $1 trillion or $1.5 trillion for an infrastructure bill. So we're throwing money in. And if you have the same amount of goods, and more and more dollars chasing those goods, you get inflation. And it's just – the economy is breaking. I talk to business leaders all the time, okay, small businesses, medium-sized businesses that you guys wouldn't even know exist but are the engine of the economy, and they can't get workers. Nobody can get workers. They can't get labor. They can't get people to work, and it's causing very severe problems. And we've been coasting because we have inventories, right, and we're running down the inventories – but we're at a point where there are no more inventories left, right? And production's like still like creaking along. I don't know what's going to happen, but it's bad. And the inflation, I think it's just going to keep going. Like, I don't think it's going to stop.
It's troubling out there right now with the economy. Laura Barris is in the chat, wife of pollster, the people's pundit, Rich Barris. And she's dropping some hints of a potential another pullout from People's Pundit tomorrow, which will show Youngkin up by 3. So thank you, Laura, for sharing us before it came out. So that would be 3 polls out within 24 hours showing, again, the trend is looking favorable. And I followed Rich's his show this in recent days and his Twitter, and he's hinted that the independents seem to be swinging. These late-breaking independents seem to be swinging – and Laura could correct me if I'm wrong here, towards Youngkin. So that seems to be behind that. But kind of back to this Glenn Youngkin thing. I think he's the perfect type of candidate for Virginia. Obviously, you can't have a very outspoken Trumpian type candidate in a state like Virginia. It's just not.
No.
It's not going to fly. But you could still get more, I don't want to say establishment, but a more traditional type Republican. And what's worked for him is, again, he doesn't say too many, he doesn't say controversial or polarizing things, which is what the left loves. And they've probably just been waiting for an opportunity to attack him if he said something polarizing or controversial. None of that. He's been perfect in that area.
He's been a very disciplined candidate.
Very disciplined. The left has tried to paint him as a Trump disciple, but it's not working. And it's not as though, you know, Youngkin's even like sought out an endorsement or anything like that from Trump. He's been laser focused on the issues, running a campaign based on the issues and running a campaign perhaps on a winning issue, which is education, which again, in certain states, that's not going to work. In a state like Ohio, we're going to talk about the Ohio Senate race. That is not going to be the style that's going to win it. But in a state like Virginia, he's doing everything right. And kudos to him and kudos to his advisors who are helping him run this campaign. I think having a disciplined campaign where the left have, you know, again, I still think they hoped that he would say something or he would just try to really, you know, worship at the altar, we'll say, of Trump or something like that, hasn't happened. And they're getting beat on an issue they're traditionally stronger in, according to the polls, that is, education. So it's encouraging. I would have said last night going in, I would have been, if I were a betting man, I would probably have McAuliffe 0 to maybe 2 points would be the victor. But these polls out this evening seem to be showing a trend towards Youngkin, and I could see him winning. I'm not 100% there, but it looks encouraging. But before, Dane, you throw something in here, I do want to say a major concern I have.
Okay.
And I'm going to say it.
Okay.
And it might upset people. There is, and I touched on it already, Virginia has a history of these election returns coming in initially in heavily Republican areas. Republican goes up. It happened in 2016 with Trump. It happened for a few hours, even in 2020 with Trump, yet he lost the state by 10 points, where you're like watching, like, what's going on in Virginia? It's like the states, the map's filling in. It looks great.
Right.
Those Northern Virginia suburbs. And then it also happened in 2014. I remember watching the results with my dad at the time. Ed Gillespie was down by close to 10 points in the polling averages against, I'm not even sure who, I think it was Mark Warner. He was up almost the entire night, and just late, Warner went ahead once the DC suburbs came in. Gillespie only lost by 17,000 votes. Here's my concern. I think we're going to see a similar type thing to 2014. Youngkin's going to go up. We're going to be very optimistic about things. And then we're going to be on the edge of our seat once we start seeing those Northern Virginia suburbs come in. And my fear is, especially if Youngkin falls behind, especially if it's real close, I have concerns about allegations and things like that are going to be thrown out there. It's just my hope that if Youngkin wins, he does it by at least 1.5-2%, something like that. Just leave no doubt and let's just win this thing. But I'm just making a prediction of what I could see possibly happen.
So I got a hot take. I think you're going to be wrong.
I hope I'm wrong.
I think you're normally right, but here's
my wife would say I'm not right much.
I'd say you're right a lot. You seem like a reasonable guy, Michael Metzinger.
I try to be.
Yeah. No, I think everything. First of all, I totally get where you're coming from. I hear you. It gives you PTSD. There have been so many cases in Virginia where they come so close, and especially early on in the night, and you're like, "Oh, we're gonna win this," and then just like an avalanche of votes come in Nova, and you just can't stop it. Right? I totally hear you, and it's hard to hope, but I think you're wrong, and I think that this is why. I think Republicans are very, very fired up. Democrats don't have an Obama at the top of the ticket. You know, 2014 with Gillespie and Warner. Warner was he's a charismatic guy. Kerry McAuliffe is a weak candidate. And it was the Obama years, right? The Democrats they loved Obama and they still love Obama. They wanted to support Obama, right? So they turned out for him. Republicans are fired up. Democrats have a weak candidate. And then crucially, I think independents are tired of 3 consecutive terms of Democratic governors, because you've had Terry McAuliffe, Ralph Northam, and I think you had one more. I was pulling it up, and it's just been too many, right? Governors of Virginia. And I think that they want to switch. I have a theory. Okay, Bob McDonald was before that. And before that, it was Tim Kaine and Mark Warner.
Yeah.
So I think that they want to switch. I think that they're ready to mix it up. And I have a feeling that Glenn Youngkin is going to pull it out. I really do.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I think that people are going to use this as a proxy vote against Joe Biden. I think this is much more of a national race than people realize. So not only are there problems in Virginia with the schools and the kids getting raped and the gay porn and the libraries and all that other ridiculous stuff and the critical race theory, but I also believe there is a huge backlash against Biden and people are pissed off against Biden. And I think a lot of independents who are like, yeah, I like Obama and yeah, Trump's annoying, are like, fuck, Joe Biden's fucked this up. And I want to show my displeasure with him and I'm going to vote for Glenn Youngkin or I'm not going to vote. I think those people are out there. So I think there's a chance.
Yeah. The other thing is, and I'm looking at the Fox News poll, which Ryan Gerdusky had tweeted a couple hours ago. Joe Biden's approval, 43%. His disapproval's 56%. If it's to the tune of something like that, it's going to be a rough night for McCulloch. The other point is, and here's where I could tend to agree with you. Those old school suburban Republicans that abandoned Trump, abandoned the Republicans in the Trump years, I could see them coming back. Again, Youngkin is not a controversial candidate. He's laser focused on the issues, especially education. And when you mess with something like that, which involves, I would say, you know, parents, mothers, fathers, their children, it gets people fired up. And I think that could be something that pushes Youngkin over the top, especially in those Northern Virginia suburbs, just enough. He's not going to win them. But if you could eke out, you know, reduce the Democrat margins by 5 or 10 percentage points in those counties, which is doable, he most certainly could win. So obviously, I hope I'm wrong. I want to be wrong. I'm just throwing it out there as a concern that I have. I don't want to get my hopes up as I watch the election results. I think we'll probably know by probably 11 p.m. how it's going to go. But, you know, we'll see. Nonetheless, the fact that we're even in this race is encouraging. But you know what? With this late momentum, I think we got to win it. We got to win it moving towards 2022.
Yeah, we got to start winning areas like this. By the way, I think the race that this is going to be like is the 2009 Bob McDonald versus Craig Deeds. Now, obviously, I don't think it's
going to
be.
Thank you, Laura.
It's not going to be a huge blowout, but I do think I think it's one where the Republicans going to eke it out.
Yeah. So moving on. So again, what's your prediction, I guess, before we move on to the Ohio Senate?
Oh, what's my prediction for what?
Virginia governor.
I think Glenn Youngkin wins. I think he wins. I think he wins by like a point, maybe two. But I think it's tight, but I think he wins.
I think it's trending your way. Like I said yesterday at this time, I would have said McCulloch 0 to 2%. I'm in the more tied Youngkin plus one. I think I'm seeing enough. I just don't want to be – listen, I was too bullish on the late trends in 2020 with Pennsylvania and Arizona, and I'm just trying to be a realist here. It's not that I agree, not that I don't want him to win. I do, obviously, but we'll see over the weekend. I'll make my final call probably Monday, maybe okay. Tuesday at like 11 o'clock at night.
Come on, make it now. Come on, go all in.
Like I said, I would say Youngkin 0 to 1%.
Okay, that's okay. I thought you said the other way. Yeah, okay, I'm with you.
I just see. Now that we'll have three straight polls out within 24 hours showing the same thing, I think there's something happening with the late breaking people who is going to seem to be pushing Youngkin over the top, which is going to be key. So, which will be great. And we'll talk about that on our next episode. Before we wrap up, though, I do want to talk about circle things back here to our home state of Ohio. There was a Senate forum held in Columbus with Hugh Hewitt. And he had six of the candidates: Josh Mandel, Mike Gibbons, Jane Timken, Bernie Marino, J.D. Vance, and Matt Dolan on. And it wasn't really a debate. It was more forum, but they were all on the stage together. They, you know, questions were posed. It was, I thought, well done how it was. There was, you know, everybody had their opportunity to make their points heard. And I thought it was a pretty good evening just to kind of hear the different candidates. I like the overall crop of candidates. There's a little bit for everybody, You've got the Mandel, you know, he's running that probably gets more to the core of the hardcore, I would say, Trump supporter. Not, again, not trying to be generalizing groups of people here, but it seems as though he's kind of running that style of campaign. And then you got Matt Dolan, who's running more as a moderate. But there was a couple things. There was a great thread, and I'll post it on in the chat from this Taylor, I'm going to butcher his name, Popolars, where he had gone through, yeah, I probably butchered that. He went through some sound bites or some different quotes throughout the evening. And there was he summed it up pretty good in a great way. First, the question came up, would you welcome retiring Senator Rob Portman's endorsement? And all of them, with the exception of Mike Gibbons, actually said yes. And I think that's going to – it'll be a key endorsement, which might surprise you, Dane, when I say that.
Yeah.
You know, Portman won the state last time around, I want to say to the tune of like 22%. He's popular, not so much with the far right or maybe even more traditional right base nowadays. But he was popular for a time. He won re-election – again, 6 years ago, 5 years ago, that is, by 20 some points. And for even a Mandel to welcome that endorsement, I think is, shows a level of respect for him, for Portman, that is. And so I was sort of surprised with Mike Gibbons saying no. There's a few other things, but actually the one quote or one question I thought was interesting was the question of greatest crisis facing kids. And there's some different responses. J.D. Vance said absent fathers. Jane Temkin said CRT. Bernie Marino said indoctrination. Mike Gibbons, wokeism. Josh Mandel, God being taken out of society, which I actually, of all these answers, I tend to agree with. And then Dolan for Ohio, equal opportunity has turned into equality of results, which you kind of touched on earlier in your comments on Virginia. So, but overall, again, I kind of like the mix. There's a little bit for everybody there. But kind of my takeaway, I kind of like Vance, Gibbons, and Marino. And I just think two of those three are probably not, you know, well known. But I thought overall it was a pretty good evening.
I didn't get to watch it. I'm just reading the answers. Greatest crisis facing kids, J.D. Vance, absent fathers. I'd agree with that. Jane Timken, critical race theory. Yeah, it's kind of like it's trendy and it's bad, but I don't think it's the greatest crisis. Bernie Moreno, indoctrination. Okay. Mike Gibbons, wokeism. Okay. Those are three variants on the same answer. Josh Mandel, God being taken out of society. I think there's something to that. Dolan for Ohio, Matt Dolan, equal opportunity has turned into equality of results. Well, that is a problem, but I don't know if it's the greatest crisis facing kids. I like the J.D. Vance answer. I think J.D. Vance has a lot of social conservatism of, like, you know, people should get married and not have kids unless you're married, which I agree with, right? People should stay married and you shouldn't just get divorces willy-nilly. And, you know, if you have absent fathers, that does things to children, and it's hard to have a productive society without that. Yeah, that to me resonates. That's a fresh breath of air instead of the same talking points. My take of the six, I like J.D. Vance. I think his campaign could be stronger.
I think it's getting stronger, though.
I think it is getting stronger. I think it's ramping up.
And we've been critical. We've been critical.
I think
we haven't beat around the bush on that. I'm encouraged. He actually was on Dan Rivers in Youngstown last week, and he did a pretty good job on there.
Yeah. Yeah. I suggested that, by the way. Timken, I feel, is just a little too plastic. I think she's a smart woman. I think she's very capable. She's a hard worker, just too plastic. I think a little phony. Bernie Reno, decent guy. Don't really know much about. I just don't think he's going anywhere.
I don't disagree with you. He just kind of just like some of his answers and his overall style.
Yeah. Mike Gibbons is like a nice guy. And I think he's, you know, he's surprisingly one candidate that I think has done really people. He's done well. Right. I wish he would run for something else. Like, he keeps trying these long shot campaigns, but like, I wish you could just do like a local lieutenant governor or something like that. and stop trying to go for Senate, I think he'd win. I think he'd be a good guy.
Yeah, I like him, and I think he's in it for the right reasons, and he's sitting on a lot of cash. And
yeah, so he's so maker, funded. Bro. I think he's Lang.
$6 or $8 million he's already put into his campaign, and he's pretty much the only one with TV ads. And I see them every night when I watch the local news here in Youngstown.
Mandel is Mandel. He says a lot of the right things, but he has a record, right? He is a career politician.
He didn't make a point, which is probably a good topic for another episode. He says he got an applause. He says the battle is not against likely Democrat nominee Tim Ryan, but the more important fight is the fight for the soul of the Republican Party. And I think that's the angle he's kind of hitting things from.
Yeah.
He doesn't want the old school establishment running the show, especially in Ohio, a state with, you know, Mike DeWine as governor, Rob Portman, you know, retiring now. You had George Voinovich. He wasn't so bad. Bob Taft, you know, maybe that old branded of Republican. He wants to bring that new style.
Hardcore. Yeah, I mean, look, he's kind of a troll. I saw him at the airport in Cleveland, by the way. He's put on a lot of weight because he used to be very tiny, but he's beefed up. I think that's intentional. To blend in with the demographics of Ohio, where we're chubby people, myself included. Matt Dolan, I think, is a very intelligent guy. I think he might be the smartest guy up there. He's very capable. I just don't think he fits the current Republican Party.
Now's
again,
not the time for him to run at all.
No, I would prefer to see him as like some organizational leader where you're like the lieutenant governor and you're like managing bureaucracies, right? That I think Matt Dolan would be excellent at that job. He's not a charismatic senator. So I actually think you have a little thing where you have, why did you do this, Michael? You have each candidate in their religion.
Yeah.
And I'm you just said kinda... Josh Mandel, Jewish.
Well,
are you against Jews? What's going on there?
Mandel,
Jewish. I had no idea he was Jewish.
And I'm guessing Matt Dolan. And back to Matt Dolan real quick. The other reason I don't think it's a good time, his family, I believe his father is the owner of the Cleveland Guardians. And
yeah.
That is not, that's bold. It doesn't even sit well with me. And that, of all, you know, I like to think I'm a traditional, you know, even keeled type of person. I used to love the Indians and I'm over them. I did not watch a single minute of them this past year. And that might surprise a lot of people because again, I'm not, you know, I don't get really into polarizing things. It just bothered me. And if it bothers me, you know, it bothers a lot of people who think like me. And so I just thought timing wise, again, you know, I understand why they did it, but they still caved. And I'm just not a fan of that. But the reason is I think Jane Timken mentioned her Catholic faith, and then I know J.D. Vance on River's show, I believe, mentioned his. I just I'm like, let me do some research here. And just to me is fascinating because you look at the U.S. Supreme Court right now. I believe it's 6 Catholics, 1 Episcopalian, and then 2 Jews, Jewish justices. And so when I just see this, it's just – I don't – know if there's much to it, but there just seems to be like a lack of a Protestant type.
Oh, yeah.
I could be off on this. I thought Portman was also Catholic. I could be off base on
Dolan's that. Catholic. I'm Dolan pretty sure is Catholic. Dolan's Catholic. Yeah.
I know the Dolan family, at least I believe the, you know, obviously they're the owners of the Indians or Guardians, that is. I thought they were Jewish, but I could be wrong.
No, I looked. They all went to Catholic schools, and I think they have a larger family. I think I'm pretty sure they're Catholic.
It could be. I'm not saying, but nonetheless, it's just something. Some random tidbits, some facts that just kind of strikes me as interesting that this is similar to the Supreme Court. No correlation or anything like that, but.
Why are the Protestants not more active? What do you think that is? The Protestants founded America. You accept that fact, right? As a Catholic,
they most certainly did.
Where are they? I think they're all in the Democratic Party, actually.
and again, this could be a topic for another discussion. I remember one of our early episodes of this show, you talk about WASP, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you kind of, I might be generalizing here or taking your words out of context, but you kind of hinted that they're like that country club type of group.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say that those types of people are elite, but maybe they're more wealthy and they fit the old school Republican Party, and now they've abandoned that for the Democrats. But although I don't really view WASP as going to the Democrats either, I'm no expert in Protestantism whatsoever, so I don't know.
So you have to distinguish between the high Protestants and the low Protestants, right? And the high Protestants are the mainline Protestant churches, and they descend from different regions of Europe. The Presbyterians from Scotland, the Episcopalians from the Anglican Church in England, the Lutherans from the German church in Germany and Sweden, and I think they're a Reformed church from the Dutch, right? And then the Methodists also from England. These are your mainline Protestant groups, and most presidents were Presbyterians or Anglicans, right? Or Episcopalians. Episcopalians, mm-hmm. the Anglican church in America, but yeah. They have their own leadership because the King of England is the leader of the Anglican church. Okay. That's your high Protestants. Okay. And then you have your low tier Protestants or your low Protestants. You've got your Baptists, your evangelicals, your Pentecostals, Mormons, if you would consider Mormons Protestants. And I'm trying to think of one more, right? And those are two groups. And the low church, more focus on evangelicalism, has shifted definitely to the Republican Party. I don't think anyone.
I think that might be a big thing right there. If you're going to see a Protestant type candidate in the Republican fold, they're probably
exactly
more likely to be evangelical.
Your high church shifted to the Democratic Party. Or they became atheists, and the atheists are almost all Democrats. But with the Catholic Church, I think it was the inverse. Your upper-tier Catholics, your wealthier Catholic families, your intellectual Catholics favor a particular stream of like right-wing Catholicism. And you'll see those guys be very Republican. So like the Catholic guy that's a small business owner with like a couple million in revenue, he is a big right-wing guy. And then your lower tier Catholics, right? The poorer Catholic, and I don't mean lower, I'm just saying income, they're more likely to be Democrats. So to the Democrat, with the Catholics, the upper go Republican, the lower go Democrats. Whereas with the Protestants, the upper go Democrats and the lower go Republican. And of course with Jews, right? The 75 to 80% are Democrats. And then your Orthodox Jews are tend to be Republicans. And your Reformed Jews and your conservative Jews are going with the Democrats. So to me, the Democratic Party is a hybrid of your old WASP elite and Jewish intellectuals coming together, forming the center left, the new left. And the voting population of Democrat are still your working class Catholics. And then the Republican Party is increasingly a Catholic elite running the party, right? And a lot of the intellectuals are Catholics. William F. Buckley is a classic example. And then your masses are the evangelical group. So anyways, interesting dynamics, but you'll see that come up again and again and again.
Yeah. And I think we'll be seeing more Catholic presidents in decades to come. Real quick, there was a question from Twitter. Zach, who is a left-leaning Twitter follower from Youngstown that I follow. He does a lot of great political analysis. He asked, do you think someone like Mandela has a potential to go too far right and alienate the suburbs too much in the general? From my perspective, he's gone much further right than Trump, but I doubt he can turn out rural voters quite like Trump did. Thank you for the question, Zach.
I think he wins in a general, even because Biden and the economy is so bad. I do think in, what is this, 2022, 6 years, 2028, I think that there is the potential that he could be vulnerable if the electorate swings back to the left or if there's a popular Democratic president. So he could be a one-termer. But I do think if he wins the primary, he is likely to win the general just because of the disaster that is the Biden administration.
And I guess I'll add to that. Just this were 2012, I would say, you know, pre-Trump in Ohio, I'd say, I don't know. But with the state being a plus, you know, a, let's say what R plus, you know, 10, 12 compared to the nation as a whole, maybe even more than that now, it just seems as though the eventual Republican is going to be the winner. But 2 points. One, Ryan's going to run like Sherrod Brown, and Sherrod Brown has won two, three times now statewide. We know Tim Ryan, and we've seen his numbers, his margins crater, similar to Joe Biden's, that is, and his approval rating. But there's that aspect where if you run as a Sherrod Brown type candidate who has been successful, could that help Tim Ryan? The second point is, I think if you, to Zach's point, if you go at it too far, does it make the race closer than what it should be? Let's say if it's like a traditional, if Portman were running again, Portman, I think, would win, you know, probably by double digits, just because of independence and all of that. But does having a Mandel type candidate alienate independence that makes this race possibly closer?
Yeah, maybe.
But is it enough to flip it?
And that's, I don't think it's enough to flip it. I don't think it's enough to flip it.
2022 is going to tell us a lot about the Republican Party, especially the future of the Republican Party in Ohio, the heart and soul of it. We're going to have it in two big primaries coming in May, and we'll get an idea of kind of the overall vibe. It's going to really make for an interesting next 5-6 months here, for political geeks like ourselves to watch, especially considering we are Republicans. So, thank you, Zach, for the question. It's obviously something that I've thought of. I think what's benefited Mandel thus far, and you've touched on it previously, is the fact he has name recognition. He's previously has won statewide. He's also lost statewide, but he has served, I believe, as state treasurer. He was behind that whole idea of the Ohio Checkbook website, which is a great website for government transparency, and I give him credit for that. But you know, now that we're a few months into this campaign with these other candidates, it's you're starting to see, J.D. Vance, for instance, his numbers start coming up a little bit. The only one that's kind of surprised me a little bit, and I'll be the first to admit I was off, is Jane Timpkins. I honestly thought she was going to be the one that kind of had that path to take down Mandel and be the ultimate candidate, but it just doesn't seem like she's gaining the traction that I envisioned that she would have. Again, it's early, and the pulling out hasn't been great across the board. It seems like it's a lot of internal polls that are being pushed, but it seems like consistently she's not getting out of the single digits. So, we'll see. But overall,
she's got money. She just doesn't have charisma.
But back to kind of that forum again. I like the overall crop. I think maybe we'll even get another candidate. I thought there was another one, maybe a seventh running. I'll be curious to see if some of them eventually drop out, or if this is going to be a wild primary with six plus candidates, which I would tend to think that benefits a Mandel, because it seems like most of the other five are not taking that approach. But you know, Vance has done well. Vance kind of has this unique style to him, which isn't like from a traditional, you know, Trump wasn't a traditional politician. Vance isn't a traditional politician, but he comes at it from, kind of from a different angle, using his experiences growing up in Southern or Southwest Ohio and in Kentucky. He just got interesting ideas, and that's why I've taken a liking to him. Obviously, I don't have a pick yet, but that's kind of my overall thoughts are Vance and Marino and Gibbons have done did well the other night, I thought.
That's good. Good to hear. Well, what is this the end of the episode, Michael?
I think this is the end of the episode. Like I said, we're working behind the scenes with two or maybe three of those campaigns about getting their candidates on. Hopefully in maybe 2 or 3 weeks we could get one of them on, and then shortly after that the other one on. And you know, kind of go from there and learn a little bit more about the candidates. especially because I really want to hit it from the angle of kind of Mahoning Valley, Northeast Ohio. How's your approach to policies and how it could benefit the voters in Northeast Ohio? So that's going to be kind of my hope if we get these candidates on. One of the campaigns reached out, and another one, the other two have kind of been going back and forth with. So hopefully we'll have that, and we'd be thrilled to get some candidates on, and maybe we could try to get somebody on the governor's side on, whether it be DeWine, Renacci, or Blystone. I don't know if we could get DeWine, but I think
I want Blystone with his hat.
Yeah, he's an interesting fellow. So nonetheless, thank you everybody for tuning in. If you don't already, please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to us on whatever your podcast app is, and share it with anybody you know who likes politics. I think this was a good episode, especially on Virginia. We'll see if our predictions are right. So Dane says Youngkin plus one or two.
One to two.
And I say a one or less for Youngkin. And thank you to Laura Bears for teasing the big poll they're going to be releasing tomorrow showing Youngkin up by three. So any final thoughts, Dane, before we wrap this up?
I just
don't who's the episode sponsor?
Oh, the episode sponsor is Puffs Tissues. Puffs Tissues. In today's economy, every little helps. And for those of us who can't afford toilet paper, Puffs Tissues are there for you. And the Biden's America, you don't have enough toilet paper to wipe your rear end. But Puffs Tissues will help fill the job. So they sponsored this episode. They're doing very well in Biden's America because people can't afford toilet paper, but they can afford Puffs Tissues. And I like the one with the plus lotion. I had one with the regular just lotion, and I felt like it was a disaster. But the plus lotion is really great. So there you go.
Well, thank you, Puffs, for sponsoring our episode. And hopefully by the time our next show is, we'll have some congressional maps possibly to talk about in the state of Ohio. I believe the deadline was supposed to be Halloween, but it looks like we're just going to blow through another one in Ohio. Very curious to see how they draw the maps and how the Mahoning Valley in particular is drawn. I'm of the perspective I'd like to see it all, Trumbull and Mahoning all to combine, but I feel like they're going to probably end up splitting it up. But holding out hope that somebody like a Michael Rooley could run for Congress. He's depending upon how that map is set up. So watch our social media feeds, cause we'll be sure to be tweeting and posting, images and what have you once those are released. So with that, we thank you everybody for tuning in, and those who are going to tune into the podcast, take care, everybody.
Okay. Thanks, guys.